passage in particular is one of the ones that people criticize, and it kind of sounds that way on the surface. So I want to urge you to, as we're reading it, hang in there with me and hang in to the end. Okay, don't like walk out before the last 5 minutes, because it's really, really important to stay for the last 5 minutes. Not that you would, but I feel bad. So let's stand out of reverence out of reverence for the Bible, which is God's word. I'm going to read Ecclesiastes 9:13 through chapter 10, verse 20. This is God's word. I have also seen this example of wisdom under the sun, and it seemed great to me. There was a little city with few men in it, and a great king came against it and besieged it, building great siege works against it. But there was found in it a poor wise man, and he by his wisdom delivered the city. Yet no one remembered that poor man. But I say that wisdom is better than might, though the poor man's wisdom is despised, and his words are not heard. The words of the wise heard in quiet are better than the shouting of a ruler among fools. Wisdom is better than weapons of war, but one sinner destroys much good. Dead flies make the perfumer's ointment give off a stench, so a little folly outweighs wisdom and honor. A wise man's heart inclines him to the right, but a fool's heart to the left. Even when the fool walks on the road, he lacks sense, and he says to everyone that he's a fool. If the anger of the ruler rises against you, do not leave your place, for calmness will lay great offenses to rest. There is an evil that I've seen under the sun, as it were an error proceeding from the ruler. Folly is set in many high places, and the rich sit in the low place. I've seen slaves on horses and princes walking on the ground like slaves. He who digs a pit will fall into it, and a serpent will bite him who breaks through a wall. He who quarries stones is hurt by them, and he who splits logs is endangered by them. If the iron is blunt and one does not sharpen the edge, he must use more strength, but wisdom helps one to succeed. If the serpent bites before it's charmed, there's no advantage to the charmer. The words of a wise man's mouth win him favor, but the lips of a fool consume him. The beginning of the words of his mouth is foolishness, and the end of his talk is evil madness. A fool multiplies words, though no man knows what is to be, and who can tell him what will be after him. The toil of a fool wearies him, for he does not know the way to the city. Woe to you, O land, when your king is a child, and your princes feast in the morning. Happy are you, O land, when your king is a son of the nobility, and your princes feast at the proper time, for strength and not for drunkenness. Through sloth the roof sinks in, and through indolence the house leaks. Bread is made for laughter, and wine gladdens life, and money answers everything. Even in your thoughts do not curse the king, nor in your bedroom curse the rich, for a bird of the air will carry your voice, or some winged creature tell the matter. Thank you. Please be seated. I want to tell you a story at the beginning here that I think ties into what the teacher is telling us. And I told the story several years ago. So those of you that have been around a while, you might remember it, but maybe not. I want to tell you about Ignaz Semmelweis. I think that's how you pronounce his name. He was a doctor. He received his license to practice medicine in 1846, and he was trained in obstetrics. And that same year, he began working at Maternity Ward No. 1 in Vienna, Austria. Almost immediately, he noticed that there was an incredibly high maternal mortality rate. In other words, mothers were dying during and after childbirth at really alarming rates. At one point, it was 18%, just a hair under 18% of the women who gave birth there died. And this maternity ward was a free service to the city, but that particular place, Ward No. 1, was just notorious as a place of death. And the only women who went there were women who literally had no choice. They would rather give birth out in the field because it was such a dangerous place. But some, had no choice. And nobody really knew why this was happening. The prevailing wisdom was that there was a poison in the air. They called it a miasma. And they didn't really know, because in Ward No. 2, the death rate was much lower. So Semmelweis is working in here, and he was determined to figure out what was going on, because obviously he wanted to save lives. So he realized very quickly Ward 1 was staffed by doctors, Ward 2 was staffed by midwives. So all you midwives, cheer and say, hey, this is why we don't need doctors. No, sorry. So all the other variables were the same, except for one very important point. which today sounds kind of crazy, but there was a morgue right next door to maternity ward number one. The doctors did autopsies, the midwives did not. And so at that time, this is before the discovery of the microscope, before the discovery of germs, the doctors would move from performing autopsies straight into delivering babies. Now you can wince and cringe, all of those things. And it sounds crazy. They didn't wash their hands. Nobody thought anything of it. So Semmelweis, he theorized that the miasma, he used the same word, but he said the miasma is not in the air, it's on the doctor's hands. So he conducted an experiment. He ordered all the doctors in ward number one to wash their hands and the whole facility with chlorine and lime. And almost immediately, mortality rates dropped below 1%. From 18% to below 1%. So he submitted his findings to the medical establishment in Vienna, and you would think that he would be hailed as a hero. He was not. He was ridiculed and fired. So he ended up going to Budapest, and the doctors in Ward 1 went right back to doing what they were doing before, and guess what happened? Women started dying again. And he went to Budapest, and meanwhile in Budapest, guess what? Mortality rates were close to zero. It's just amazing. But the more amazing thing was they never believed him. Nobody. Nobody believed Semmelweis. He ended up suffering from depression and early onset dementia. He ended up getting forcibly incarcerated in a mental asylum. Because he got to the point where he was desperate and he was handing out leaflets, you know, his papers and things to anybody who would listen. They thought he was crazy. And they tied him up. And, the very sad irony of this whole story is that he died of an infection sustained when he was forcibly committed to this asylum. And it would be 30 years before his methods became standard operating procedure. And they put a statue of him up in Vienna. I think it was Vienna, or it might have been Budapest. Before people really appreciated his brilliance, 30 years. So Ignaz Semmelweis was Vienna's secret weapon against maternal and infant mortality. He saved the city, and yet his wisdom was despised. It's just, it's unthinkable today. And yet it was true. But in this passage, this is exactly what the teacher's talking about. He's showing us how essential wisdom is in so many areas of life, but at the same time, he's telling us how vulnerable wisdom is to a little bit of foolishness. It only takes a little bit of foolishness to set aside a whole lot of wisdom. And so I think it would be a good idea for us to hear his words. So there's some confusion in the way the passage is laid out. I'm going to talk about that in a minute. The first thing I want to show you, and there's an outline here if you want to follow along, is that wisdom is the unsung hero. So the teacher tells a story about a wise man, and, you know, I just felt like to me, I think I used this as an illustration, like, I don't know, 5, 6, 7 years ago. Any of you remember this from the last time we talked about it? Okay, I'm good. Phew. Do you remember the sermon I preached that day? No, okay. Yeah, figures. Neither do I. it just struck me that as I'm reading this, I'm like, oh my goodness, that's just like this Semmelweis guy. I couldn't even remember, the details of the story. I had to look it up again. But I hope this is not a true story in chapter 9 for the sake of this man. You know, I don't really know, but... it's a small city is under attack by a great king. He's probably overwhelming it with catapults and all sorts of ancient military technology. We don't know how, but somehow this wise man, this poor wise man, who had no reputation, found a way to defeat the king, found a way to stop this siege. And I would love to know how he did it, but it doesn't tell us. But in spite of an act that should have been rewarded handsomely, he's quickly forgotten and he's despised just as much as he was before. And so the foolishness of these people to do this, just like the foolishness of the medical establishment in Semmelweis' day, refused to acknowledge this great act of wisdom and heroism. So as great as wisdom is, the teacher tells us, it's vulnerable to foolishness because usually you have more fools than you have wise people, or you have stronger fools than you have wise people. So so wisdom's the unsung hero. Second, wisdom governs. So let me explain how I struggled with this passage, and many people call this chapter the most difficult in the book, verse 10, the most difficult verse in the book. It's full of proverbs. So it sounds a lot like you're reading the book of Proverbs when you're reading this chapter 10. And all of these proverbs are fit around this one theme, that wisdom is important, but it's very vulnerable. So the problem I found is they just seem to be so random. It's like, oh, here's the king. Oh, the king's over here and here and here and here. And I couldn't make it make sense in order. And so I wrestled with it for a while and finally decided I'm just going to arrange these by topic rather than in order. And that seemed to help a little bit. And so, you know, as you can see in the outline, basically it divides up into proverbs relating to government and politics, proverbs relating to speech, and proverbs relating to, like, working, safety on the job, things like that. So that's kind of how I divide it up. So the first one is that wisdom governs. Chapter 9, verses 17 and 18 says, "The words of the wise heard in quiet are better than the shouting of a ruler among fools. Wisdom is better than weapons of war, but one sinner destroys much good." Ruler among fools is better translated foolish ruler. You know, we all know that wise words are better, but in our, it seems like in our society, it's the loudest and the brashest words that end up getting the most attention, don't you think? I mean, it seems that way to me, and I think it was that way then. History offers us, you know, just countless examples of this principle in verse 18. You know, you can have years of good, wise policy that get undone by one thoughtless, foolish act. And one example in the Bible that comes to mind is King Rehoboam. In 1 Kings 12, it tells us how Rehoboam, who was the son of Solomon, of course, his wisdom is what informs the book of Ecclesiastes. Rehoboam was taking over the throne from his father, and he was warned by the heads of the 10 northern tribes because his father had not treated them well. In a sense, they came to him and they said, "Listen, you're going to need, we want to hear how you're going to rule us, because your father was, you know, was very partial. He was not fair." And we'll talk more about Solomon later, but Solomon married many foreign women. He ended up worshiping other gods, became very cruel in his treatment towards the 10 northern tribes. He was, you know, he favored his own tribe, Judah, and also Benjamin. And so, you know, they came to Rehoboam and they gave him an opportunity. They said, "We want to hear, are you going to lighten the load of your father?" And, of course, the older men advised him to do that. But he actually ended up listening to the younger men. And he chose, out of arrogance and pride, to double down. And he ended up losing 80% of his kingdom. 10 of the 12 tribes split off and never came back. So you have decades of you know, really good, wise rule by David and Solomon that are undone in this moment of foolishness. Well, in chapter 10, verses 4 to 7, you have the same principle, and it's just applied further. Verse 4 is kind of like a summary of Proverbs 15:1, "A soft answer turns away wrath." So, you know, if the king yells at you, you know, don't just take off. Don't leave, but use wisdom to sort of mitigate his wrath. Verse 5 is a little bit tricky to understand. "There is an evil that I've seen under the sun, as it were an error proceeding from the ruler." So what he's saying is that what he's about to tell you, what he's about to describe to you, is the ruler's fault. So he's the one. We don't exactly know why. We can guess. "Folly is set in many high places, and the rich sit in a low place. I have seen slaves on horses and princes walking on the ground like slaves." Now, this is a really fun one. On the surface, you read that. What does it sound like? It sounds like he likes rich people better than poor people. You know, you wouldn't want slaves on horses now. I don't think that's what he's saying. I believe what he's saying is that there's a situation here where the government has turned upside down.